thank you so much for joining Hashtag No Limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. For those who don't know, the caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells, reforms into the butterfly while it's in the cocoon. As if that's not difficult enough, it has to struggle and fight to get out of the cocoon in order for its wings to be strong enough to fly. None of that can be easy. But neither is busting through the limits that society places upon a person. Today, I'm excited to bring to you my new friend, Becky Usello. Becky and I are both supporters of Spirit of Discovery Park, and we have a mutual friend, Jamie, who said, you two have got to meet each other and know each other. And so shout out to Jamie. I don't know if she's watching or not. But Becky, it's so great to actually get to meet you and talk with you. I'm really excited to learn more about your story. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
How are you?
I am doing well, thanks.
Good. Good deal. All right. So one more business thing. If you're watching or you're listening, make sure to like or subscribe to the channel. If you are watching live with us, go ahead, as Fran just did, and give us a hashtag live and say hi or tell us where you're joining from. We'd love to know where everybody is at. If you have any questions for Becky or myself, please go ahead and put those into the chat box, and I'll be able to share those with Becky. I think that's all the business stuff. So, Becky, tell us about yourself.
I live in Springfield, Missouri. Last year, I retired from teaching public school at a local junior high after 25 years. I would say that COVID kind of brought some things to light and made me reassess my priorities. So I decided to take early retirement. I now teach part-time at my daughter's school, which is a local parochial school. And I also spend quite a bit of time advocating for children with disabilities and also for school choice issues. I'm on the board of Spirit of Discovery Park, so being kind of retired has freed up some time for me to devote to that as well, because that is very much a passion of our family.
Awesome. Yeah, we love Spirit of Discovery Park and the concepts and the ideas behind it. And of course, Jamie. I mean, how can you not love Jamie?
Exactly.
And so we have Leah popping on and saying hi. Great to have
Leah.
You, Leah. So I didn't know that you were a former teacher. What did you teach?
I've always been at the junior high level. It's always been seventh and eighth grade. I've taught American history, social studies, Spanish, all of that in between.
Okay.
And so,
well, God bless you for teaching middle school, because I like the primary students, the gen ed ones specifically. But for my special education students, which is where I taught all of my years, I did K-8. My husband teaches gen ed business at the high school level. And both of us are like, yeah, we really don't want to be like full time every day, all day with the junior high kids. So thank you for being that, because we need people. We need sectors of people. So
yes.
I very much appreciate that.
Yes, it's definitely a calling to be at the junior high versus I did not want to do high school, and anything below sixth grade. No, thank you.
Yeah. And when he started subbing, he did the primary grades. He did a kindergarten classroom, and I'll have to tell you the story sometime, because it was awesome. And not in a good way for him, but it's a funny story. So, so when you taught, gen ed, did you have students in your classrooms who had the eligibility under special education?
I did, especially with social studies, since social studies is a core subject. So I was very much involved and very much wanted to see the special education teachers as part of my team and helping. I realized after I graduated from college that I didn't feel well equipped to differentiate what I taught. And I don't know what it is like now, you know, 25 years later, if that has been fixed in the college programs. That's what I was afraid of. I felt like I wasn't well equipped. And so I relied heavily on the special education teachers to help me figure out what I was supposed to do, because my advisor in college had told me, you know, if you love children and you love your subject, then everything else will be fine. And to a certain extent that was true, but I felt like I just didn't have enough tools in my tool belt to adequately teach. And when I went back and forth between social studies and Spanish, I did have fewer students who needed support, just because Spanish is an elective, and some students could not put that into their schedule because of the minutes, and I understood that. But what really hit home for me was when our daughter started school, and we knew she has physical disabilities, and she also has learning disabilities. And I wanted her to be included in with her classmates, and I didn't want her pulled out. I know she needs supports. I want those supports to be there for her to be successful, but I do believe that support can be given without pulling the student out of the classroom.
I love that. And I so appreciate what you said about coming out, not feeling trained to differentiate. I was not the best special education teacher for a lot of my gen ed colleagues because I didn't really give that the credence that it deserved. I came out with a special education degree, but I felt like so much of what I learned on the job. Mm-hmm. And I felt as if I could do that, then my gen ed colleagues should be able to do that. And I would get very aggravated with them because, well, if I'm doing it, why aren't they doing it? Mm-hmm. And then after several years, I had the realization about how little training our gen ed peers get in differentiating, in behavior management, in yes. classroom styles, in learning styles, in all the things. And yet we're putting children who are eligible for special education as much as is appropriate into the gen ed classrooms and expecting the gen ed teachers to teach them.
Right.
And it's really, now that I've been out of teaching for a few years, I realize how unfair that really is, especially to our really new teachers who yes. haven't had opportunities to get that professional development in differentiation.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, it's something that I think needs to be addressed and
Absolutely.
Needs to be addressed quickly, because as you saw my head nodding, anyone who's listening would have seen that, but it doesn't seem any better. I mean, I'm still hearing too many teachers come out and not know how to do that. And thankfully for my husband, he lived with me all of my years of teaching. He just started teaching a few years ago. And so he kind of has, you know, live-in support for, well, he does have live-in support, but he also had that experience of watching me and
right.
listening to me over the years talk about differentiation. But he did the track that so many people are doing now, which is I was in a different career mm-hmm. and then I'm going to go into teaching. I have my bachelor's degree, so I just need to do some paperwork and maybe a few classes, and now I can be a teacher. They certainly don't have the training.
No, no. And I've seen that. I actually had a student teacher a few years ago who was older than me, and he had no idea how with classroom management. And, you know, I easily had 30 students in my classroom. There were sometimes 32, sometimes 28. And you know, he did not know how to manage typical junior high behavior. And he ended up failing student teaching. I mean, I was not, I tried to help him, but he had the idea that since I was younger, that I surely didn't know what I was talking about because he had more life experience. And I saw him probably a year or two ago, and he had finally found himself a teaching job in some small community. And I thought, oh, I really hope that he's gained some good life experience with teaching, but you know, it's really doing the students a disservice when we fast track adults who want to be teachers. And I think it's great if you want to jump into that pool, great. But I do think there needs to be some serious work done on the student management side and how to differentiate for all sorts of students. It's not just the students who qualify for IEPs. There are students who have been through trauma and students who are neurodivergent, and all of these student needs have to be taken into consideration when teachers plan.
Yeah. And for anyone who's watching or listening, you're probably thinking, well, all you're doing is talking about, you know, teacher prep. Well, teacher prep goes a long way into one of the things that you advocate for, which is school choice.
Yes.
So talk about that, because in some states, that's a thing already.
Yes.
But in many states, that is still needing to be fought for. So if you would talk a little bit more, a little bit more about that, please.
Sure. I got started in the school choice conversation when our daughter was in kindergarten in public school. She was going to our neighborhood school for early intervention, and it was a wonderful experience. If you don't know how those classrooms work, it's typically half typical students and half students with disabilities, whether it's physical or cognitive or learning. And so it's just a nice, our experience was that it was a nice little community of students. And she was in there for 3 years. And since kindergarten through fourth grade was in the same building, we just assumed that that experience would continue. And it didn't. Her kindergarten teacher was looking for ways to have her removed from the classroom because Isabella's learning was definitely not typical. But aside from the classroom issues that I had and I brought up to the teacher and administration, the playground was not accessible, so she could not do anything on the playground. We had agreed to let her participate in what they called adaptive PE. Because of her physical disability, she uses a wheelchair. I did not know that that meant she would be excluded from her classmates. So it was her and the PE coach, which she loved the one-on-one attention. But she also loves being with her peers, and she learns with her peers. And so we brought our concerns to the teacher. We went up the chain of command, expressed our concerns, offered possible solutions, especially to the playground issue. And there were even things like she could not access the sink in the bathroom because the sink had a pedal to turn the water on. And wow. This was a fairly new building in our district. And so the solution was, oh, she can go to the nurse and use wet wipes. And I'm like, no. That's not what we do. So again, we had brought our concerns. We'd had several meetings. We brought a parent advocate with us who said the meeting went great, best she's ever been in. And they changed nothing. And it was the attitude of, we can't do this for just one student. And the thing is, I know that my daughter is not the only student with disabilities in the district or even in the neighborhood. But this particular elementary school was very proud of their record of being in the top three for test scores and for attendance. And at the time, Isabella still had many different medical appointments that, of course, were excused, but it's still listed as absences. Mm-hmm. And the one comment that I will never forget is when the teacher wanted her to go to occupational therapy. And I said, what's wrong? Why does she need that? She said, well, she doesn't hold a pencil well. And I said, well, can she use a marker? Can she use a crayon, something else? Like, and she goes, well, when it comes time for standardized testing, she needs to be able to darken the circle. And I thought, oh my goodness, we have lost our way. Yes. And the straw that broke the camel's back for me was when we asked specifically for Isabella to be retained in kindergarten because she had not mastered the skills to go on to first grade. And they said, no, we can't hold her back. And I said, why not? And they said, because she has an IEP. And I said, but we want her held back. We think it's in her best interest. And they said, oh no, we'll catch her up in first grade. And I looked across the table and I said, I have been teaching at this time. I had been teaching for not quite 20 years. I said, they don't catch up. They don't catch up. I get them in seventh and eighth grade. They still have challenges that should have been addressed years ago. And so I had talked to my friend that I had taught with years ago, who was the principal of a parochial school. And she had asked me for updates and I told her, and she said, you know, there is an opening in kindergarten if you want to put her in kindergarten at our school. And I said, yeah, but we're not even Catholic. And she said, it doesn't matter. We have all sorts of faiths in our school. And I said, okay, we'll give it a try. And it was the best decision for our daughter. She's not pulled out of class. Her teachers have always differentiated for her. It's such a lovely community of different learners, and people accept differences. And, you know, it doesn't just benefit my daughter. It benefits the other kids because it has become organic for them to hold the door open for the elevator at school. Or if she needs help with her backpack, like, it is organic for them to help.
Yeah.
It is not something that has been instructed or mandated. It is just part of that lifestyle. And I feel like that's how we build a better society.
Yes, 100% agreed. And I'm glad you brought up, and I'm glad, but I'm sorry for your experience, but I'm glad you brought up the, well, we won't hold her back because she has an IEP. I don't know why that's ever started. I don't know what where that thinking came from.
Yep.
But that is not in the federal law. I'm not a lawyer, but I've read the law multiple times and it's nowhere in there.
No.
But oftentimes administrators have that in their head that because a child has an IEP, they're automatically not eligible for summer school because they're already getting extra services during the year. Mm-hmm. And there's a difference. That's a big pet peeve of mine, is there's a difference between extended school year and summer school. They're not the same thing. There's other episodes about that. And this idea of, well, they got all this extra support in their IEP. We'll just keep moving them forward.
Mm-hmm.
No, if it's not appropriate, don't move them forward. And so I appreciate that you, and Fran said that as well. She said, good for you for standing up and speaking, because a lot of parents wouldn't know that, and they wouldn't know to speak on it or say anything or feel like they could say anything, even if they were thinking it was wrong. And so I very much appreciate those comments and those experiences from you. So Leah and Fran have been commenting a few things, and I just want to point them out. So Leah said earlier, I know Becky, she's awesome. Mm-hmm. I love what she does. And I told you what Fran said, and now Leah says they're a gen ed student first. They have the same access in every educational decision.
Absolutely. I agree.
So when you're talking about school choice, so your child is now or was at the Catholic school, how difficult was that? Because you said you're in Missouri. So what kind of, with school choice, is it that the public school district pays for it? Is it that you get a voucher? Like, how does that all work?
So when we first put Isabella in kindergarten, I took on 2 to 3 extra jobs to pay for her tuition. She loves school. She's going into seventh grade and she still loves school. And I think that is precious. And I know from my teaching experience that isn't always the case. And so I wanted to do everything I could to preserve that spirit of learning and wanting to be in school. And so I took on a couple extra jobs, no big deal. But then I started hearing things on national news, you know, Arizona and school choice. And I think I heard about Utah and school choice. And I thought, okay, I gotta investigate more about this. So I'm Googling and I'm starting to make some connections with some Missouri state legislators. I had not heard anything prior to my digging deep. And I think that's kind of odd that at the time there wasn't more attention on it, because I think it's something that a lot of parents are interested in and they may not know how to access the information. So I started getting in touch with some legislators' offices and saying, I'm very interested in this and what can I do to advance this? Well, the first year that I did this, it was April, and I was not aware that the legislative session ended in May. And so pretty much it was like, nothing we can do. So the next session, the following January, I was able to find out when Senate and House committees were meeting and, you know, open public testimony. So we would drive up there to Jefferson City, which is about 2.5 hours away. And we would, sometimes it'd be an 8 o'clock in the morning session. So we'd be getting up at 4 o'clock and like, okay, let's go, let's stop at Starbucks and we'll be on our way. And I did have people that would say, you know what, you're testifying for 3 minutes and then you're going home. I'm like, but people need to hear our stories. This is about access to education. And my daughter was not receiving access to her education. And I get it. I've been in the system of public education. I know how it works. And I know that individual teachers try to change things, but it's an institution and you can't change an institution overnight, nor can you legislate attitudes. And when we had taken Izzy out of public school and put her into private, there was a teacher that her principal knew that called the parochial school and said, well, good luck with that family, talking about us.
Oh,
I thought we didn't really even have a chance of success in that building because we had already been labeled that family. So anyway, I know that was a sidebar, but we spent 3 years going up to Jefferson City testifying for school choice. And then when it passed, we were crossing our fingers that the governor would sign it because we had heard that there was a chance that he wouldn't. And I got a message inviting us to come to the governor's office to watch him sign it. And so, of course, we went up there. And I think the biggest win for me was Isabella now knows how a bill becomes a law because we have been to the committee meetings. We have sat through those. We've been to the governor's office, watched him sign. And so she has that hands-on experience of seeing how it happens. The current school choice in Missouri is in the form of educational scholarship accounts. And those are through organizations. What you can do is you can donate money and get a tax write-off. And the money is then dispersed to the first tier of eligible families are families that qualify financially because of the poverty line, but also students who have IEPs. Mm-hmm. So Isabella qualifies because she has an IEP. And that was last year. So last year was the first year that she had an ESA. And so this year we were hoping to expand the number of students who qualify for an ESA. It didn't happen. There were several things that were going on in Missouri State Legislature that kind of a cluster, but the school choice kind of got set to the side. So I'm hoping in January we'll see a resurgence of that, because I think parents are realizing that the school choice issue isn't just about religious reasons. It's not religious reasons. It's not necessarily indoctrination. The buzzwords that we hear the media use.
Sure.
It's for some of us, it's simply about an education that's appropriate for our kids. So I'm hoping it'll gain some steam next year.
Yeah. So just a few more comments, because I didn't want to interrupt you, and I'm sure you saw them. But again, for anyone who's just listening, Fran has also advocated. She's gone to Springfield in Illinois, our state capital. When you were talking about the comment that this teacher made to the parochial school, Leah says, "Oh, for the love." And I totally agree. And so Fran wants to know, how do those on need find out about this in Missouri? Is there a website to go to? How do they apply?
So in Missouri, if you go to the Missouri State Treasurer's Office website, there is a link. The program is called Mo Scholars. So M-O for Missouri and then Scholars. And there's an application that you can fill out and find out if your family qualifies. And right now, the only families that qualify, aside from what I had previously said, in cities, in districts that have a population of more than 30,000 people. So Springfield, St. Louis, Kansas City, Columbia. I'm sure I'm leaving some cities out. But that was another thing that we were looking at. We were hoping to expand ESAs to districts that have fewer than 30,000 people in their population. Because really, school choice should not depend on your zip code. You know, if you are willing to drive your kid to a school, you should be able to put your kid there.
Right, exactly. And so I'm just trying to get this website up there. So I found the Missouri Treasurer, treasurer.mo.gov/MO Scholars. And then I'm not sure if the parent students one is, I mean, that one gives a lot of information. Yes. I'm not sure. I was trying to quickly scroll through it to see if there was an application button or anything on there.
It will get you to where you need to go.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. And I think a lot of the reason, as we kind of hinted at the beginning, of school choice needs is because, to know honestly, really no fault of a lot of teachers, they just don't know. Mm-hmm. They haven't been trained, as we mentioned. And, you know, I think we do need to do a better job here in across the U.S. My clients that I work with as an IEP coach, I have clients all over the country, and I'm finding this everywhere, that teachers really want to do what's best, but they don't have the skills, and they often can't ask for that specific training I don't know that they can't, but they don't, because they're fearful.
Yes.
Of looking as if, well, what do you mean you don't know how to do this? What do you mean you'd have to have training in this? You have your college degree. You're the teacher. You should know. And they don't want to look unintelligent or unprepared. In front of the teacher, in front of the parents, in front of their administrators, in front of their colleagues.
Yes.
And, you know, we have to get past that.
Yes, I agree.
We're not coming out trained. We're not providing teachers out of college prep organizations that are colleges that are really ready to go.
Yes.
And on the flip side of that, even if it's not a young teacher, fresh out of college, as we mentioned, we've got all these people who are second degree or second career. Gosh, I can't talk today. Second career people coming into teaching, which is fabulous, because they do bring a lot of experience. But there's so much that is still unknown. And on top of all of that, we have so many different disabilities now that it's difficult to know everything about every disability and then how it manifests in the individual child.
Yes.
And I want our standards in the United States to be higher than I think they are for teachers. I'm very impressed that you tried to work with your student teacher, the student teacher still didn't accept it, and you failed them. Because I think that takes a lot of guts and a lot of courage. Because I think oftentimes by the time somebody gets to that point, their mentor teacher, whether they think they'll be good or not, just passes them on. And we need to be more critical.
Absolutely.
We need to be more refined in how we're saying, yes, this person is ready to go into a classroom. This person is trained well enough, has the skills necessary to run a classroom and to teach anybody who walks into their classroom.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I would like to see us, and I'm thinking about my own classroom experience, I would like to see us not have gen ed teachers versus special education teachers. I feel like there have been a lot of conversations about, the special ed teachers need to do this or the gen ed teachers need to do that. We have got to find a way to collaborate because in the end, all of the students are our students together and mm-hmm. all of the teachers bring different qualities and skills to the table. And we all reach different students and we just need to do a better job of coming together and not making it an us versus them.
Right. And Leah said exactly what I was thinking. Collaboration is key. And I often talk about that when I do coaching with either school staff or parents is we need to have actual discussions.
Yes.
At the IEP table, or if we don't want to do it at the IEP table, if we just want to have the discussion, before we get into the meeting, I don't care where it happens. It needs to happen though.
Yes.
We need to talk about, okay, we have this child and we need to include the parents as the equal member and we need to include the resource or the related service personnel and we need to include the gen ed staff and actually converse versus yes. most meetings that I'm at, it's just, we're going to read the IEP. Mm-hmm. If you're a related service personnel, you give your spiel and you don't really ask for comments from any mm-hmm. of the staff. You just go, is that okay, mom or dad? And you move on. And then the gen ed teacher gives their spiel and doesn't really get any comments from anybody else at the table. And then the special, and that's not a collaboration.
No,
that's not treating everybody equally. That's not having a conversation.
Exactly.
And
it's checking boxes.
Yes, absolutely. And we need to do better at that because not only are there children who we're supposed to be writing these IEPs for and who are going to benefit from our collaboration or unfortunately suffer when we don't collaborate and communicate well with each other, but then they grow up and they go into society.
Yes.
And so we're really hurting ourselves as educators by not doing what we need to be done, not doing what needs to be done and having those conversations. It's something that I, thank you, Leah. She says, yes. It's something that I speak about a lot, accommodations and modifications. Nobody's version is right, but each of us have a version of what extended time means or what mm-hmm. preferential seating looks like. Mm-hmm. And it's not that one person's is correct and someone else's is wrong. It's that we need to discuss it.
Yes.
And say, well, what do you think this looks like?
Yes.
How do you think this needs to be done in this classroom or, subject matter or whatever. Some states and districts that I've been in have worked really well with that. And they go through and they specify every subject and all the specials and all of that stuff. In other states, it's just extremely mm-hmm. generic and they don't want to be specific because what happens if we don't do it that way one time?
Right.
parents understand. I mean, I'm not saying this as a parent, so tell me if my interpretation of this is wrong. Parents understand if it happens occasionally, mm-hmm. different than it's written into the IEP. It's when it never happens the way it's written into the IEP that there's a problem.
Yes. Yes. I mean, that's, I would totally agree with that. And I feel like in our personal experience, we tried to have those conversations and, you know, they all knew that I was a teacher as well. And I wanted to come across as like, let's work together. We're a team. But when we were continuously shut down and told, and I found out later, we were not the only family that was told, you know, we can't do that for just one student. There were other instances in that building. You know, for me, it comes down to, I don't have time to try to fix the system. I don't have time to put my daughter's education on hold while we're trying to fix what's going on in this building. And to me, that's really what pressured me to go for school choice, because I am all for education reform. And I think there's a lot of people that believe education should be reformed. The question comes down to, how do we reform it? What do we do? What conversations do we have? And those are valid questions and concerns and conversations. But on the other hand, I don't have time to just let my daughter float while we try to figure it out. So I am going to put her in an environment that I trust and that is inclusive and that is willing to work with all of us as a team.
Yeah. And I agree, Leah, no one at the table should be in the dark, and parents who advocate should be commended. Unfortunately, like as in Becky's experience, parents who advocate become those parents or that family. And I don't understand that either, because as Leah said, I think you're standing up for your child. You're amplifying your child's voice when you're saying, well, I'm not sure about this, or why can't we do it this way, or this needs to change. I don't think that's a problem. I think, again, that's, you know, like you've said with your daughter, it's just natural now for people to help her with her backpack if she's struggling, mm-hmm. or to hold the door open to the elevator, or, you know, whatever it is. And that's the idea of inclusion, is to normalize it, I guess. I don't like the word normal. But,
in our house, we say normal is a setting on the dryer.
Right. Right. I mean, who's normal? And, you know, and who wants to be normal, honestly? Mm-hmm. Because it seems kind of bland, in my opinion.
Yep.
But yeah, you know, I've seen it done beautifully. And unfortunately, I've seen it done horribly, where a child is looking like they're being included because they're in the same setting. Mm-hmm. But that's it.
Yeah.
There isn't any actual inclusion, interaction, conversation, participation for that child. It's just, you're in the classroom, you're in the back of the room, you're in a corner. Maybe you have an individual aide directing you on how to do things, but that's it. And yeah, there are so many things that need to be better. And I'm like you, like, where do we start? Well, I'm starting with the individuals, and, you know, trying to make it happen one IEP meeting at a time. Oftentimes when I go in for the first time, my meetings are a couple of hours long because I make them have the conversation.
Yeah.
And I make sure that the parent is understanding everything, and I make sure that the staff understands what the parent is asking and expressing. And it's not unusual in those first few meetings that I go to for them to be longer. Now, mm-hmm. once the team gets used to my presence and how I want things to run and how I think they should be run, the meetings get shorter.
Sure. Because the expectations are there.
Right. And they know, oh, Shelly Kino's coming. Okay. Well, we better have those accommodations spelled out. We better have those goals matching the present levels. We better have things that make sense with one another. And, you know, I actually had a meeting, an exit meeting for a student not too long ago, and it was 28 minutes long. because we had done all the prep work ahead of time, and it was, you know, parent input was in the IEP, and it was just beautiful. But that's incredible. Been coming to those IEP meetings for 4 or 5 years now.
Yeah.
But it can happen.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it was great to have that happen. So let's talk a little bit about the crown that your daughter wears.
So Isabella is currently Missouri Miss Amazing Junior Teen Queen. Miss Amazing is a pageant circuit that is across the United States. And we went in March to compete in St. Louis, which is where they usually have it. And she won her title there. And we are going to Chicago next month to compete at the national competition.
Wow.
And she loves being on the stage. She has zero fear. She will talk in front of a few hundred people like it's nothing, which I'm hoping that's something she hangs on to forever with her public speaking. Her passion presentation, which is something that is required for the competition, is accessible and inclusive playgrounds. She has been working with her parochial school to make her playground more inclusive and accessible. And they are actually starting with the turf. They're going to dig up the dirt and the grass and put down turf that's more wheelchair friendly. And they're going to put in at least one accessible piece of equipment. They're going to do it in stages, which makes sense because it is incredibly expensive. But we've done a fundraiser already. We're going to do some more throughout this coming school year and see what we can do. But yeah, she's very excited to be going to Chicago because it's Chicago. Who wouldn't be excited about going there? And then to possibly, you know, the idea of winning the national crown and sash, she's very much on board with that. So
that's so awesome. That's cool. Yeah, I saw her speak at one of the SODP events. I can't remember which one it was, but yeah, I mean, she didn't have a problem at all.
Nope, hand her a microphone, she's good to go. So, but this has also allowed her to do things like she threw out the first pitch at a Springfield Cardinals baseball game. And, you know, we always look for opportunities, photo opportunities for Instagram with her crown and sash. And we're going to go to the Missouri State Fair in August because they have a show called the No Limits Swine Show. I think that's, I know it's No Limits because I was thinking, oh my goodness, that sounds like showing show. where they pair kids with disabilities with FFA kids to show swine.
And, oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I believe the governor's office is the one who sponsors this. So we'll go to the fair. She'll get a free t-shirt. She'll get to talk with some FFA kids. She's not overly enthused about showing swine because she's a girl, but I thought it's a good experience and it's a great photo op for the crown and sash. So
yeah, absolutely. And speaking of, you were talking about your photo ops for Instagram. So I just want to pop up your Instagram feed. It's Instagram.com/llamamamaucello. So definitely follow her and then you can see a lot of what Izzy's doing. That's where I've seen a lot of the things. And then also the Facebook is just your regular. If you look her up at Rebecca.ucello. Or Rebecca. Actually, she goes by Becky on Facebook, but we were having this conversation before. Apparently, when she set it up, she used her full name. So you can find her under Becky or Rebecca Ucello. And she would love to have you follow her and support all of the things than what she and Izzy are doing. And yeah, Fran says there's more to inclusion than placement.
Absolutely. 100%.
So, what have we not talked about today that you were hoping to share about today?
Well, since we were talking about inclusive and accessible playgrounds, Isabella is actually working on presenting some possible legislation to our local legislators. We were up at the Capitol in Jefferson City in April, And I heard her tell an adult, school choice is not my thing. That's my mom's thing. My thing is inclusive and accessible playgrounds. And I thought, oh, I'm wondering how many people are listening to her saying school choice isn't my thing. Benefits from it. So on the way back to Springfield, she said, is it possible that we can talk to our local legislator about legislation for playgrounds? And at the time, I said, yes, absolutely. We can definitely do that. But I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, this is one more thing right. to work on. But then when I was telling my husband about it, he's like, well, what did you expect? You have been doing the school choice thing for 4 years and she has watched you and participated. And now she sees, okay, so we can make a difference. So we're going to include her passion presentation that she's used for the Miss Amazing pageant. And I did a little research on some other states that have some inclusive and accessible playground legislation. And we're in the process of putting together these green folder packets, and we're going to start scheduling with our local legislators. And I joke when it comes to like pageants or things that Izzy does that I'm the driver and, you know, she's the one that's doing things. And this truly is going to be like, she's going to present and I'm the driver and we'll see where it goes.
Well, and it's so important. And I think most people watching will understand why it's necessary, but would you mind explaining just, I mean, like, as you said, at her school, they're changing it out from the surface. So yes. First of all, just talking about the surface, like, why is that necessary? Why can't they just play on the bark or the rubber pieces or the ground?
Izzy in her wheelchair cannot wheel through wood chips. She cannot wheel through tire chips. According to ADA guidelines from 2010, those shouldn't even be used anymore on playgrounds. Places get away with it because they say, oh, well, we're putting it in our 5 to 10 year plan for renovation. Mm-hmm. And again, to me, 5 to 10 years, I mean, 5 to 10 years from now, she's going to be a college graduate in 10 years. You know, it's too late. You know, we've got to start doing stuff now. So something as simple as the surface affects her accessibility. Also, a lot of playgrounds have the PVC pipe that retains all of that wood chip stuff. Mm-hmm. She can't get over it in her wheelchair, and very rarely is there access to it, or even a small ramp doesn't exist. For Izzy going into seventh grade, the playground isn't so much about playing. It's about a place to hang out with her friends. So the surface piece is a really big piece for her. You know, even just having an accessible swing or an accessible, I think they call it a swirl, where she could wheel on and lock her brakes and be like a merry-go-round. You know, just something where she feels like she belongs with her classmates. And we do not, yes, it is hard with walkers too, absolutely. And that's something that, you know, when I've been talking with Jamie about Spirit of Discovery Park, you know, it's not just about children and children's access to play equipment or playgrounds or parks. You know, an accident can happen anytime. Any of us can find ourselves needing modifications. I think of our veterans that come back from being overseas and, you know, wounds that they may be healing from and just adjusting. And grandparents that want to hang out with their grandkids. I mean, it's not just children that benefit from things like inclusive and accessible playgrounds. It's the community, because it's a place where anybody and everyone can come together and hang out.
Yeah. And I loved what Leah said. It's parent access and guardian access, which kind of coincided with what you were saying, as far as, you know, being able to be out there. If you have a walker, as Fran mentioned, you know, or you yourself have a wheelchair, but your child uses their legs to get to the swing, you still want to be able to push them.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, there's so many things that we take for granted And we just, we don't think about what we're saying sometimes. Because I have heard in my experiences as a teacher with students who were in wheelchairs, well, just get one of those extra big attachments to the swing, you know, and then take them out of their wheelchair and put them in that adaptable swing, and then take them out of that adaptable swing and put them back into their wheelchair. Okay, that might work for someone who's, you know, 4 or 5 or maybe even 8. But I had students who were as tall as me.
Yes.
Who wanted to swing. You know, you, that's not easily done. It was, I mean, we made it work for our students because that's all we had. But it is, it's so much more. And I had tagged a friend of mine who got the law passed in Arizona about having bigger changing tables.
Yes.
In bathrooms. And I was hoping she would join because the advocating that the two of you are doing. Because yeah, absolutely. What, and her, it's called dignified changes. And Leah says dignity too. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. The bathroom thing, when I would take my students on field trips, they would ride on the bus and I would drive my van separately because I was not going to change them on the bathroom floor.
No.
And it was the only other option was for me to put them in the back of my van and hang up coverings and change them back there because they shouldn't have to miss being on a field trip and they shouldn't have to lay on a disgusting floor. Because the changing table is for a toddler only.
Yes.
But honestly, Becky, until I experienced that myself, I didn't think about it.
Well, and that is something that I've talked about with, you know, my friends and Jamie. You know, I don't think there are a lot of malicious people out there that are, you know, anti-adult size changing tables, you know?
Right.
But until you experience it, until you live life with those modifications and accommodations that are needed, you just don't know. And something that Jamie and I say to each other all the time, you know, when you know better, you do better. And that's what my hope is. When people are exposed to what other people go through, you know, they want it people to do better. And that's one thing with Isabella, you know, we have a friend that talks about how representation matters. You know, there's, if sometimes it is easier just to stay at home and because it's our safe place. But on the other hand, people need to see that there are other people out there in the community and what needs to be done in the community to accommodate. And I don't think we ask for too much to have accommodations made. You know, I think of some restaurants that we've stopped going to because they are not wheelchair accessible. And their excuse is, well, we're in a historical building. And I'm thinking, don't really care. You know, the, what is it? The Colosseum in Rome is accessible. I mean, you want to talk about historical property.
Right.
There's an example right there, not something that was built in, you know, the late 1800s. So,
right.
I mean, I think representation definitely matters. I'm grateful that Izzy likes to be out in public and likes to talk to people and likes to make friends because I think that helps move the conversation forward.
Yeah. And to your point before about, you know, some of us are just an accident away. And then Fran says, yeah, until it's real to your daily life, you don't care. So when it becomes real to your daily life, you care. And I think, and I didn't know this statistic until somebody shared it with me, but I think it's something like 80% of people who are disabled are not disabled at birth. So it's something that happens to them over time or because of an accident or whatever. That doesn't mean we need old timey rules just because something is in the historic district for sure. But that's one of the reasons that I do this because I feel exactly what you said. It's that perspective. It's that exposure to so many different things, because as I said, I'm very passionate about special education. and people who learn differently. But I didn't know some of the stuff until somebody told me about it. I'm like, oh my gosh, I never thought about that.
Yeah.
And exactly what you said. I'm not a malicious person, and I don't think most people are. But you have to bring it to them for them to go, oh.
Yes.
Okay. That's your experience. Oh, I don't walk in your shoes. So I didn't realize that that was your experience. Mm-hmm. So we have just a couple minutes left. I just want to make sure that we've covered everything. I very much appreciate the conversation that we've had so far, and probably can have many more conversations with you. Probably won't turn them off. Hashtag no limits. That's very good, Leah. Yeah. Just be a constant learner and listener. The listening key is key. The listening part is key. Because if you just have a conversation with somebody and you already have your preset notions and you don't actually listen with your heart, you're still not going to change.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So anything else?
No, I feel like we covered a lot of ground today.
We did. And I usually do in my hashtag no limits because I'm just, you know, I'm very passionate, and all of my guests are usually very passionate. So, so make sure that if you are interested in what Becky is doing, so even if we have a child with unique needs, we don't truly know all how they experience life. That's very true as well.
Yeah.
Make sure that you follow Becky. You find her on Insta. Whoops, nope, that's not you. That's Llama Mama Ucello on Instagram, and just Becky Ucello on Facebook. Make sure that you keep in contact with her and follow all the things that Izzy is doing. I look forward to the No Limits Swine Sharing competition. I may have to make a trip to the Capitol or to the State Fair to see that happening and be introduced to those folks. So thank you, Leah and Fran, for all of your comments and for joining us today. Anybody who is watching or listening to this in the replay, please feel free to comment as well. I will look at them. And if there's anything directed specifically to Becky, I will make sure that she gets it as well. Join me next week. I will have Trent Stonehouse, who was deaf until the age of 5. And he has become a multimillionaire entrepreneur doing amazing things with CEOs around the country. So everybody have a great week, and I'll see you next time.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shelleykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shelleykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.